Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals of Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Coral Wong Page presiding. All who have business before this court draw near and you will be heard. God bless the United States and this Honorable Court. Please be seated.
Okay. Good morning. I'm Judge Peach, and I'm joined by Judge Bartley on my right and Judge Jaquith on my left. We are convened today for a hearing pursuant to Rule 23E2 of the Court's Rules of Practice and Procedure in the case of Anthony Gladney Chase versus Douglas A. Collins, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 24-4427. This case involves a request for class certification and class action seeking to certify a class comprised of similarly situated claimants who have filed a notice of agreement following a denial by the Veterans Health Administration and who have been waiting at least 180 days without receiving notice from the board, either docketing or rejecting their appeal. On April 24th, 2025, the court granted the certification for the class. The parties have jointly moved the court for an order under Rule 23E2 to approve the terms of a proposed settlement agreement. Under this rule, the court may only approve a proposed class action settlement after holding a hearing to determine whether the proposed settlement is fair, reasonable, and adequate. Before we begin, the court would like to recognize the University of Chicago School of Law's Veterans Legal Clinic and its student members who will be making appearances on behalf of the class. Will counsel, beginning with class counsel, please enter your appearance for our record.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Yelena Duterte, and I'm with the University of Illinois Chicago Veterans Legal Clinic.
What did I say?
The University of Chicago.
Oh, good grief. I'm so sorry. Oh, no. The court sends its apologies to you.
No apologies necessary. We represent Mr. Gladney Chase in this matter and class counsel. Here with me are Jasmine Booth and Carolina Darmo, both law students who have entered their appearances and have been approved by this court. Ms. Booth will be presenting the opening, and Ms. Darmo will do any follow-up if necessary.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Nathan Kirshner for the Secretary, and with me at council table is Mark Vichich. Thank you.
Thank you. Before council begins, let me go through the process and procedures we will be following today. We will initially have class counsel explain the major features of the proposed settlement, after which the secretary will advise the court as to whether if this is an accurate recap or if there are any disagreements or if there are any further comments they wish to make. The secretary, thereafter, this class counsel will explain to the court why the proposed settlement is fair, reasonable, and adequate. This will be followed by the secretary's counsel explaining why to the court why the settlement is fair, reasonable, and adequate. So if counsel are ready, we'll begin with class counsel presenting the major features of the proposed settlement.
May it please the court. Here are the key features of the proposed settlement agreement. This agreement provides meaningful relief for the certified class members, the veterans and the dependents whose appeals to the board have been delayed and stuck in the pre-docketed queue for at least 180 days as of March 18, 2025. Under the agreement, the VHA will transfer all necessary records of class members to the board by September 14, 2025. The board will act on those appeals within 45 days of receiving the files, either docketing the appeal or notifying the veteran that their records are incomplete in order to be docketed. Once docketed, the appeals will retain their original place in line based on the date the original appeal was filed. If the file is incomplete, the board will request the missing information. And then lastly, this proposed agreement also addresses the VHA will implement a uniform nationwide process for transferring records from pre-docketed to the docketed queue to avoid delays in the future. This agreement puts an end to an unnecessary uncertainty where veterans will no longer be stuck in the dark. They will know whether their appeal is in the right place, if they have all the documents, and if they're just pending decision moving forward. It brings structure, accountability, and transparency to the system. Thank you.
Counsel for the secretary, could you take the podium, please? And this way, it'll get on YouTube. So do you have any comments, any disagreements, anything you wish to add to that?
Just, may it please the court.
Yes.
Just one thing, Your Honor. I just want to go back to the agreement to look and see the statement about notifying the veteran that the record is incomplete. I believe it was that VHA or the board was going to reach out to VHA to say that the records were insufficient to docket, and then they would go back and forth to attempt to find the records. But largely, that tracks, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, class counsel?
Your Honor, so this court's Rule 23 doesn't spell out what fairness means when it comes to a class settlement. So we believe that the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 23E2 offer a helpful framework in guiding this conversation today. Understanding that it's not binding, we believe if we look at this proposed settlement through the lens, it could really help evaluate the proposed settlement and also assess the fairness of it. So under the Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 23E2, courts look at the following things to assess fairness. One, have the class representative and counsel adequately represented the class? Two, was the settlement negotiated at arm's length? Three, is the relief adequate, considering risk, cost, delays, and the method of relief? And also, lastly, does the settlement treat class members equitably? And also, in some instances, assessing any class objections when determining the fairness. So in Sosna versus Iowa, the Supreme Court offers a persuasive framework for evaluating adequacy. But to put simply, Sosna asks whether the class rep has a will to fight for the class, and also if there is a conflict of interest in regards to the class. So the class rep right now is Mr. Anthony Gladney Chase. He filed the class petition in writ in June 2024, following 2 months of inactivity pending his VA appeals. Within 3 to 4 months of filing, those three appeals were docketed, suggesting that the petition proposed meaningful action. By the time the class was certified in April 2025, his appeals had been docketed. However, he still had live claims when he filed his writ and also when he filed the RCA in June of 2024. He has no conflict of interest with the class. It continues to have a personal stake because he files for a clothing allowance every year, satisfying the adequacy requirements that is laid out in SOSTA. Moving forward to the class counsel and determining if they're adequate. So class counsel and law students have engaged with over 49 class members who have already reached out since the class has been certified. They've reached out about questions regarding benefits, including caregiver support, healthcare eligibility, and then also adaptive equipment. So many of the members had forgotten what appeal that brought them into the class was, reflecting how long the delays have been. However, most of the class members that we talked to, they were relieved. They weren't angry. They were relieved that someone was doing something. Class counsel also convinced to just being a place where class members can ask questions, raise any concerns, and also gain clarity. Sometimes amid explaining what the class action meant, what the settlement was, and then other times it was just listening to them venting. Counsel also has provided clear information, once again, listened to concerns, and connected members with pro bono clinics to help with claims, to help them with their individual claims as well. Council remains and continues to be an ongoing involvement throughout the entire implementation of the process. So in conclusion, in regards to the first prong that FRCP 23E lays out for us in regards to class adequacy, the class council and class rep, in this proposed settlement, that has been met.
And then, I thought we were talking about adequacy, fairness, and reasonableness, not in terms of class council, but just in terms of the proposed settlement.
Yes, Your Honor. And that is also the same framework as applied when assessing fairness as well. And the next prong is arm's length negotiation. So there has been no contingency fees were sought or received by class counsel. Attorneys and law students were compensated only for the hourly work on the matter, not from class members. And then fees would have likely been higher had class counsel rejected the agreement and proceeded through litigation. There's no evidence of collusion, and all negotiations occurred independently and with full information. This outline reflects the independent bargaining consistent with the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure as well and the traditional definitions of arm's length.
How was the proposed settlement negotiated? Who proposed what? How was it initiated?
Yes, Your Honor. So class counsel proposed the following terms in the settlement agreement. A majority of them are still the same. Negotiations happened between November 2024. And so class counsel proposed the following terms in the settlement agreement. A majority of them are still the same. Negotiations happened between November 2024 and February 2025. In that time, through those discussions, the final settlement proposal here today, that's how we got here. Okay, and then moving on.
Were the negotiations hampered by any information deficit, or put another way, what do you wish you had known that you didn't when you negotiated the agreement?
Your Honor, negotiations weren't hampered by any information deficit. There's no thing that we wish we would have known. I feel like the reason why negotiations may have taken longer than expected or not even that. The reason why they were so long, because we understand that there's moving parts when it comes to implementing and fixing the system. But to answer your original question, no, there is no information that we wish we would have known.
Repeat again, how long did it take to negotiate?
From November 2024 to February 2025.
Thank you.
And then moving on to the next prong on that effort, the federal rules lay out for us the adequate relief compared to the risk. So the relief is guaranteed, it's meaningful, and it's trackable. So class members will no longer sit in the pre-docketed queue. The settlement moves their appeals forward and ensures action within a fixed window, docketing or requesting more information within 45 days of the file receipt. Without this agreement, the court could face over 19 individual writs at this point, leading to fragmented and delayed outcomes. And the agreement also creates a uniform process for VHA to transfer records to the board, possibly reducing confusion for pro se veterans in the future as well.
So I noticed that in the proposed agreement, there are various ways of characterizing what VHA has to transfer to the board. So in paragraph 2, you say all documents, and then in 5 and maybe 4 and 5, you talk about the VHA file. And then in 4, you talk about the VHA file. In 5... you talk about the sufficiency of the file, and sufficiency of evidence. And so, what exactly are these documents? Is there just what? And shouldn't you use the same term throughout your agreement instead of referring to it? I know there were three different ways that I think you were referring to the same thing.
Yes, sure.
So, what are these things that need to be transferred to VHA?
Gotcha. And Your Honor, just to make sure that I understand your question, do you mind if I repeat it back to you?
Oh, sure.
So to make sure I'm answering it. So what you're asking is, what are the documents that we're referring to when it needs to be submitted to the board in order to make a docketing decision? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So the documents are different depending on the appeal process. So the appeals can be from caregiver support, requesting more help when it comes to adaptive equipment as well. So the documents do vary in that sense. However, I believe the opposing counsel will be able to answer that more efficiently as because he knows more about the system in place when it comes that's already there. But yes, that let me know if that answered your question.
Well, I guess without a fuller answer, it's hard to tell whether there's a meaningful distinction between the different characterizations that are in the agreement as to these documents, like a file, a document, like what, why are those different? Why are those terms different? So I don't know, maybe Secretary's counsel might be able to better address that. I understand that there are different routes through VHA, through which these might be sent to the board, but
gotcha.
So that's sufficient for now.
Okay. Is
assurances the right term, or if they are assurances, are they real ones? More specifically, I guess, are the Secretary's agreement in paragraph 3 of the proposed settlement agreement to ensure that the board makes all reasonable efforts, and the board's promise in paragraph 4 to work expeditiously, concessions of benefits that extend beyond what the board is, their pre-existing obligations?
So, Your Honor, you're asking if assurance is the right word for the terms of the agreement saying that the board would work quickly in order to ensure that they are docketed. Is that correct? Yes. So assurances is the right word because currently being in pre-docketed queue, the class members are not aware of if they're filing in the right place, if they have all their documents or their records that they need for that individual appeal. So assurances is the right word. That 45-day time period allows the board to review the file, make sure that they have everything in order to make a decision to either docket the appeal. And then if not, within those 45 days, they will work with opposing counsel to ensure that veterans or work with opposing counsel to see if veterans have the documents that they are missing and go from there. So yes, assurances is the right word.
It doesn't sound like it's a cabin with walls. It's more like a movable tent.
Okay.
Depending on what reasonable efforts yield and efforts at expedition, whether they're successful or not, they're not. It's not really a set time frame. That's the question I'm asking you: is it a set time frame? How set is it if it is qualified with words like making reasonable efforts and working expeditiously to make something happen?
Your Honor, I think I'm not understanding your question. So the set time frame would be the 45 days that the board receives the file. So within that 45 days, whether they are docketed or if they need more information, that class member would be notified. Is that the moving tent that you're referring to?
I'm talking about paragraphs 3 and 4.
Okay.
The proposed settlement agreement. 3 says that the secretary agrees to ensure that upon receipt of the necessary documents, the board will make all reasonable efforts to docket or decline to docket. Not that they'll do it, that they'll try.
Yes.
Isn't that what they're doing already? They're trying, but there are circumstances that they say make it impossible.
Yes. However,
how's that going to change?
Yes, Your Honor. So I thank you for clarifying your question. So yes, they are trying, but however, now they are trying within that 45-day time period. I understand that they meet that I understand that not clarifying reasonable efforts is not laid out in there. However, there is a cap on the 45 days. So within that 45 days, they should be responsible for either ensuring that they have the records or they need to work with class counsel to see if the veteran, the class member has the records. Yes.
So what is contemplated to happen at day 180 when nothing has happened?
At day 180.
Instead of 45, day 180. So four times that number. Are we going to be getting petitions or other communications related to the progress of the class?
Yes, Your Honor. We will be submitting petitions because it goes against the proposed settlement agreement of that 45 days and also the 180 days deadline of September this year as well.
Will the secretary be able reasonably to say that we're trying really hard to be faster, but we just can't?
Well, Your Honor, Your Honor, thank you for the question. So this proposed settlement agreement isn't perfect. However, it is a start. So it is a start. At the moment, people have been sitting in pre-docketed stages for months and years without any guidance or information of where they are in the process. While the proposal is not perfect, it is a start and ensuring that VHA implements a process to avoid future delays in the future, or to avoid future delays.
So if I could just follow up on that a little bit. So this problem that class members had or are having was generated by the board now processes the appeal document, whereas before the Appeals Modernization Act, the regional office processed the appeal document, and the board didn't have any process in place. I'm going to ask the secretary this question as well, but we're over 5 years past the effective date of the AMA now. So whenever you first filed your petition, you mentioned, I think it was over 10,000 appellants or claimants who were trying to get their appeal docketed at their VHA appeal docketed at the board. So was that the accumulation of 5 years worth? Or was the board literally doing nothing for five years?
So that was the accumulation of 5 years. So for the last class member, the class member with their earliest appeal date was in 2020. So over 4 years, by the 4 years that they had not received a decision. Over 4 years they had not received a decision. Does that answer your question here?
Yes.
Okay.
It explains how we got here.
Okay.
Which wasn't 100% clear.
Okay.
Why, and like I said, the secretary may be better to, you know, position to answer this, but it's unclear why. I could see a year or two, maybe, but we're well past that.
Yeah.
Another issue. You, Judge Jay Quith was asking you some questions about paragraph 3. And there you talk about the reasonable efforts, which he covered, to either docket the appeal or decline to docket. And if there's a declination to docket, then you would give notice would be given to the claimant. And I saw that in your most updated list, several cases the board declined to docket. So what kind of notice is this? Is this a letter, and are they given appeal rights?
Yes, to both, Your Honor. Yes, it is a letter, and also they are given appeal rights if appropriate for their claim.
Okay. And just in terms of assessing the reasonableness, fairness, adequacy, we are to look at those who aren't members of the class and whether they're getting the disparities between the treatment between class members and non-class members. So do you know whether those who are not class members have also been getting notice and appeal rights?
I do not know if people who are veterans who are not class members have been getting notices and appeal rights. However, I believe that speaks to the fourth prong that the FRC lays out, which is the equitable treatment of the proposed settlement agreement. So from this proposal, every class member will receive identical process-based release, and that goes back to the pre-docketed queue to the docketed queue within the 45-day or receive some sort of notification within the 45-day, letting them know if they're being docketed or if more information is needed. So this makes the process more transparent than it has been. It allows for monitoring, and it also designs to ensure that no one falls through the cracks, especially when it comes to these class members. Even with the nationwide process, it will apply to future veterans as well, future claimants who aren't in the class. It doesn't make the settlement necessarily inequitable. It's a broader application that simply improves the administrative process that is currently in set now.
And the non-members are non-members because their situations arose outside the time frame specified?
Yes, Your Honor. The non-members are non-members because we closed the class on March 18, 2025.
There's not an opt-out?
No, Your Honor, there is not an opt-out. Because this is injunctive relief, there is not an opt-out option.
Have the terms of the proposed settlement agreement been applied since the agreement was reached, even though we haven't considered it?
Yes, Your Honor. The terms of the proposed settlement agreement has applied since before this fairness hearing today. It reflects that the process is working. We started at 10,000 individuals, and as of Monday, we were at 19, who were not docketed yet. So from the 10,000 to 19, only 19 have not been docketed. So it does show that this proposed settlement is already working. And again, once, like I mentioned earlier, it's not perfect, but it is a start.
How many, did you investigate how many class members passed away while they were waiting for, because I know, and I want to get to this shortly, or maybe we'll get to a little bit later, that one of the objector, mm-hmm. I believe there was only a single objection to mm-hmm. this, mentioned it was a family member who said that the veteran who is the class member had passed away. And so with what frequency was that happening? Do you know?
I do not have the number of the frequency, nor did I investigate how many class members have passed away. However, going to the objection, the one objection that the court received today, it wasn't necessarily an objection. It was, again, expressing their concern about why it took so long. But however, her claim has already been addressed, and she also has appellate rights.
The court got the objections. Did you get any objections at all from any party?
No, Your Honor.
If I could go back to Clause 3 of the proposed settlement agreement, and let me just read it. The Secretary agrees to ensure that upon receipt of the necessary documents, the Board will make all reasonable efforts either to docket the appeal or to decline to docket it. Within 45 calendar days of the receipt of the complete claims evidentiary file from the VHA. But putting 45 days, but in the beginning of the sentence it says reasonable efforts, but mm-hmm. at the end of the sentence it says 45 days. So was there any reason that you had both of those terms in? Because if you say 45 days, I mean, that's it, 45 days. Mm-hmm. So what was the rationale behind having reasonable in 45 days?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe opposing counsel will be better able to answer that question simply because they are more aware of the systems that are currently in place. However, the reason why there isn't necessarily a deterrent or a definition of what reasonableness or reasonable effort is because there's trust and accountability that we expect from the other side. And also, we're not here to micromanage the VA, but to secure enforceable outcomes. And this agreement does that. So the VA, more than anyone, understands the complexities of its own systems, and they are in the best position to develop a system or solution that works within the realities.
Thank you.
Okay. So based off of what we talked about today, the proposed settlement agreement meets all the elements of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure when it comes to measuring fairness, while understanding that the federal rules are not binding. It is a guideline that we hope to look at this proposal through. And thank you for your time. And are there any other questions?
Did you personally? I'm sorry.
Oh.
Well, I did have a question about number six. And again, I'm going to ask the secretary this, but I thought it might be valuable to get your view of this. Paragraph six says respondent agrees to create a uniform process for VHA to follow to transfer documents to the board, allowing for differences depending on the type of VHA decision being appealed. So this to me seems like the paragraph that is looking forward mm-hmm. and looking perhaps a little bit, maybe this is just the way I see it, but looking beyond the bounds of this class to go back to what we were talking about before, what caused this problem? Mm-hmm. There was no, I'm assuming there was no process. Is that's kind of what you said before?
No.
You left it to secretary. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So I did class counsel think of perhaps nailing down some of these, the parameters or the process that will be used, because this is very vague. And yet this is to me the crux of, you know, how this whole thing is going to be fixed, because we don't want to at the court be getting a petition, you know, next week from someone who's been waiting for 3 years for their VHA appeal. And maybe they fell outside the bounds of the class. That is, they weren't, you know, by March 18th, 2025, they hadn't been waiting for 180 days yet. And, you know, so whatever. Or maybe they fell outside in another way. Yeah. So this to me like seems like a very important paragraph. What are you doing to fix the problem? So did you, whenever you were negotiating, did you think of putting something more concrete in here that would alleviate any, problems just generally, and to get to like the nub of what caused the necessity for this class?
Your Honor, so this process is fractured in multiple different ways in which class counsel does not have all the information as opposing counsel has in order to understand the system that is currently in place and what needs to be fixed in order to ensure that this does not happen again. Therefore, because the system that's currently in place is so complex, we did not put any parameters around what is needed to be fixed. However, because this is not a perfect settlement agreement, and I do want to reiterate that. However, it is a start, and it is there's no downside when it comes to the class members or future claimants at this point in time. That answer your question, Your Honor?
Well, yes, it did, but I don't know about the future claimants part of it.
Were you personally involved in the negotiations?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. The secretary essentially agrees. The settlement here is fair, reasonable, and adequate because it provides the procedural relief sought to the class, which is for the board to either docket or decline to docket appeals that have been on the pre-docket queue for more than 180 days. It facilitates the transfer of records from VHA to the board so that the board may make that determination. And here, I think this goes to some of the questions that you brought up to class counsel. I want to explain a little bit about the process of VHA appeals versus VBA appeals, because I think the court is very used to VBA appeals. And in VBA appeals, the records are in the VBMS system. It's, you know, something that the board can just directly access. It's pretty quick and easy comparatively. Appeals from VHA decisions are a much more complex animal. They can be appeals, as was noted, from caregiver programs, from adaptive equipment programs, from prosthetics, from beneficiary travel. There's a wide array of benefits that are done by VHA, and a lot of them have different processes in how they make a decision. Some of the decisions are made by like care providers instead of adjudicators. So figuring all of that out and then finding a way to get those records to the board is really kind of what has been the crux of this settlement agreement. The big issue has been, you know, the board has the NOD, and they've requested these records from VHA so they can say, well, should this be here or not? And sometimes it's taken a very long time for VHA to get them those records. So even just to go to the vagueness question, having some kind of more centralized process to be able to collect these records in a timely fashion and send them to the board would be a step forward in this case, because it's not like a VBA case where the board can just open VBMS and sort of see everything.
Well, true. But well before the AMA became law, VA had an obligation to treat VHA claims the way they treat VBA claims. That was from, I remember that from 1999 or 2000. Like, so this isn't, so why was there no process already that could be just, maybe the RO was doing it at that point, but that then it's just like, oh, well, just now the board's doing it. So now the board does it. Are you saying there was absolutely no process at all as to VHA claims prior to the AMA?
No, Your Honor.
Because you were correct that we hardly ever see VHA claims here. And there's a reason for that.
Yes.
And the reason is not because veterans are not unhappy with VHA decisions. I think it's, this is my own personal opinion here, because the process hasn't been as streamlined or accessible to VHA people, VHA claimants, as the benefits process is. And that's a real problem. Whenever you say that, you know, yes, you've had this obligation for what, 25 years now at least, and there was not much in place prior, or maybe you don't want to go that far. I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I'm just pointing out that that's a huge problem.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't want to say that there was nothing in place prior. There is sort of the process that was in place for the class action, for the class members. First, to go back to the AMA point, I'm not sure that the implementation of the AMA has a lot to do from the secretary's position with what's happening here. I mean, I think class counsel kind of brought that up, I believe, in their petition, and we're fine to kind of go with that as part of the settlement. So, the process as it's set up would be that the board would make a request to a hub for records, and the hub would send requests out to the various, regional offices, medical centers or VISNs whoever is responsible for the initial adjudication of the claim. And again, that's a very, very wide group of not only organizations, but also geographical locations. And so if you have a VISN, you know, in Tampa, it's going to have probably different procedures than a VISN in Chicago. You know, that's very possible in terms of how they manage their records and things like that. So the hub would send out the request, and then the relevant either VISN or medical center, the adjudicative body, would then be responsible for sending the records back to the hub, and the hub would transmit them to the board. And the problem isn't that there was no process necessarily. It's more that there was a I'm trying to think of the best word, uneven application of the process. You know, a lot of, you know, a visit in one place would send records at a different pace from a visit in another, or a particular kind of claim, like a prosthetics claim, might take more time to send the records than, you know, a beneficiary travel claim. And so it's kind of, because of those diverse business lines, those diverse geographies, the problem really has been just kind of figuring out a way to make it all happen more quickly and more efficient, and not have anything kind of just, you know, falling off. And I think what class counsel has done is pointed out, you know, the large degree to which things had fallen off. And, you know, this settlement not only provides the precise relief the class members requested, that is the procedural relief, you know, but it also gets the ball rolling for VA to centralize this more, make sure that, you know, the process, you know, there is a process, and that process is going to be followed. So I think this really, you know, I hope that's a good overview of kind of the context here. This is really, I think, a situation where the parties have both recognized the problem, and they're trying to do the right thing by the class members through the settlement.
I'm just curious, though, and I know I'm glad you're not taking it personally, because I know that's not it's not your fault, if we're speaking of fault. But are the VHA, is this whole process electronic? Because as I pointed out to class counsel a few minutes ago, there are various ways of referring to documents, evidence, VHA file, sufficiency of file. There's just like all these different ways of referring to it. What, is this an electronic process then? Are these electronic records, or is this?
Not completely. And then that's why I say it's been particularly difficult with the diverse array of processes that are in place. You know, I think when things are transferred now to that centralized hub, they are transferred electronically, but that doesn't mean that necessarily at every program office or every VISN that all of the necessary records are stored electronically. So sometimes it's a question of finding the records, you know, getting them together, making them electronic, transferring them to the hub, getting them back to the board. And so there are several steps kind of in the way the system is made where there can be breakdown. And unfortunately for these class members, there has been breakdown. So, you know, we're...
But hasn't the failure of health records modernization affected both VHA claims and VBA claims?
I'm not sure I can speak to the question intelligently, Your Honor. I'm sorry. It's possible, but I think for our purposes here, you know, the electronic health records system and how they're managed in VBA claims is just much more efficient than it is for VHA claims, because at least everything is centralized, whereas in VHA it isn't, and you know, it's not even necessarily all electronic. So
is the differentiation a function of attention and repetition?
Again, Your Honor, I can't speak to that. There are simply too many variables in terms of the VHA records transfers that happen. I really don't feel like I can speak to such a broad question on it.
I mean, it seems like we have a practical problem. There is a practical problem that failure from infrequency of invocation of the VHA claims system and adjudication. But it runs headlong into a legal obligation that's no different, right? Whether it's a VBA claim or a VHA claim. And the AMA didn't significantly change that, but it made it clear. I think was maybe the only change was the removing reconsideration by VHA as a step. But other than that, it made clear under the AMA, it's the same choices, right?
Yes, Your Honor, except here what we have, the problem that class members, the class counsel identified, and I think this is why the AMA kind of becomes important, and it's what the court brought up earlier, is that because of the AMA, I think that is what, you know, established the different appeal options and also centralized, like, receiving the appeal and docketing the appeal at the board, because the ROs weren't receiving the appeals, receiving the appeals. So now that this function is centralized at the board, instead of the appeal being received, you know, at the RO, at the VISN, or wherever it had been under prior to the AMA, they're all received at the board. And the board's obligation is really the crux of this case. The board has the obligation either to docket or not to docket the claim and move it along, the appeal, and move it along. And that is the place where things had been paused, because what would happen is an appeal would come to the board and they would send out the request to the hub. And depending on, again, that wide array of particularities within the VHA system, sometimes they would get a quite prompt response from, you know, the relevant VISN with the records they needed, and sometimes they wouldn't, and it would languish. So the board felt they couldn't take action.
What's the board's authority to decline to docket an appeal until the board receives the complete claims or evidentiary file from VHA?
Well, for that, Your Honor, I will give some of the reasons that the board has told me that they've been rejecting some of these claims. Simply, like, if a docket was created in error, if something's created due to an incorrect appellant, if there is an incorrect review option, it should be on another docket. Let's see. One was considering a motion for reconsideration of a legacy case instead of its own appeal. So when they receive these NODs, they have to internally make sure it is a valid NOD, and they look to their regulations for that. And sometimes they find that they're not. Another reason was it was an appeal of an issue that was never adjudicated. And in those cases, they'll say, well, we're not going to docket your appeal.
Are we to understand from the proposed settlement agreement that the practice that the board has been engaging in is to assign docket numbers to these VHA appeals, but not actually docket them? How does that work?
Yes. Yeah, so there, each appeal, if you look at AMA appeals that, you know, the court sees every day, the first part of the board docket number on that appeal represents the date. It's the date the NOD was received. And so they will assign it a docket number.
And that's because that's the statutory and regulatory trigger, right? Not when they get the information internally, which should happen seamlessly. And if it doesn't, why does that fall on the veteran or other claimants?
Well, it shouldn't, Your Honor, to be frank. But the board assigns that docket number, and then they go about their process of, you know, finding out whether it's a valid appeal or not. And if it's not and it's rejected, then, you know, that's what happens with that case. But if it is accepted, it retains that initial docket number as required by statute. So even, you know, the claimants here in the class whose appeals are from 2020, 2021, they are getting a 2020 or 21 docket number. So as soon as the records are in, they are put in that place in the line in the queue for adjudication by the board.
But surely some cases have been adjudicated ahead of them in that period of time.
I mean, surely, Your Honor.
You can't count on the board being that far behind that consistently, can we?
No, Your Honor. They don't stop, you know, the rest of the claims moving through the board. The board is deciding, you know, many claims every day. But when these are actually docketed and, you know, I'd say the majority of the class members' appeals have already been docketed at this point. When they're docketed, they're given their place in the line. So the later appeals are moved up to the front.
And what percentage of board appeals, this might even be in an annual report, what percentage of board appeals are VHA versus VBA? Do you know that breakdown?
I don't know, Your Honor, but we can provide that if the court would like.
If I could direct your attention, and for the benefit of the question, let me read Section 6 of the settlement agreement. Respondent agrees to create a uniform process for VHA to follow and to transfer documents to the board, allowing for differences depending upon the type of VHA decision being appealed. So this is what going to go straight forward from hence. And how long will that take to, yeah, you agreed to create it, but how long will the creation take?
We're not sure, Your Honor. This settlement negotiation has involved input from multiple stakeholders within the agency. And it really has been an exercise in, you know, trying to come up with something that would work for all parties, the relevant parties at VHA, the relevant parties at the board, and of course, class counsel, to try to find something that would work for everyone. And again, as class counsel said, you know, it's not a perfect settlement, but it is, we do think it is fair and adequate. The timeline, I don't have a specific timeline, but, you know, it will take some input from stakeholders. And I know there have been, you know, stakeholders have informally told me of some ideas that they might have, but I don't know if they're leaning one way or another or what at this point.
And then if I could go back to the third portion of the paragraph 3 of the settlement agreement, and I had asked class counsel as to the rationale where the paragraph says we'll give that the secretary will make reasonable efforts and then tax on at the end a 45-day. Could you talk to that?
Sure. Again, the language in this agreement involved a lot of stakeholder input. I believe stakeholders were a bit nervous about just saying 45 days. So we were able to add the reasonableness. We have no expectation that, you know, and certainly no hope that any of these will take longer than 45 days. But if you read the agreement as a whole and go down to paragraph 5, when it talks about, you know, whether the files received are insufficient to determine whether a particular class member is properly before the board, you know, in a situation like that, you know, when VHA looks for the files for 14 days, has trouble with that, then they would contact me and class counsel so that we can help the board get those files. And then we could, you know, class counsel can reach out to the claimant. And I think that there's a universe that exists where in a situation such as that, perhaps the board would take longer than 45 days. But again, once the documents are there, board should be able to do it within 45 days. I think it was just kind of the board was concerned about the potential of unforeseen events keeping them from being able to do something in within precisely 45 days after receipt.
Thank you. And so two follow-up questions. Judge Peach asked you about number 6, which I had asked you about previously, paragraph 6. So your basic answer is, well, my question was going to be, so there's no way to tweak this to include more detail about process at this point?
I don't believe there is, Your Honor. I think that to do so would require more input from stakeholders and perhaps more delay, which, you know, I think the parties, you know, aren't necessarily in favor of.
And also to go back to five, Judge Peach was just asking you, you were just mentioning the process there. I did notice that in this paragraph, and I think it's the only paragraph, you inserted this phrase for this class only. There's meaning this is a special process for class members, which I mean, the bulk of this is, I guess, a special process, but so that, but one of the things that we're looking at, as I was saying to class counsel, one of the things that I have as a criteria to look at in terms of fairness is the comparative an analysis of the comparative treatment between class members and non-class members. So that kind of struck me, that language for this class only, meaning like someone who was only 170, had only been waiting 179 days on March 18th. I think I got that right. Wouldn't get the benefit of this paragraph, number five.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think it's important to look a little bit later in the paragraph because of the particular actions that are taken. If VHA is unable to resolve the issue within 14 days, OGC will notify class counsel, so they may assist the board and VHA in assuring prompt appropriate action by the board. So this directs contact with class counsel. And if someone is not a part of the class, you know, I don't think we want them reaching out to class counsel. From my own investigations, I do believe that when VHA has trouble finding documents, they will reach out to either the claimant themselves or the representative in an attempt to secure those documents. And I believe we actually had that happen with Mr. Gladney Chase himself. So the VHA contacted class counsel and said, we're having trouble finding some documents. Do you have copies? So there is kind of a process set up for that. But for the class, for paragraph five, it also requires the involvement of class counsel and OGC. But normally it would not.
But someone, like I was saying, who was on their 179th day on March 18th, VHA is going to reach out and try to get.
They should be, Your Honor, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. But again, it's not part of paragraph five.
Why shouldn't we expand the class to a later date?
The class has agreed on it, and the secretary has agreed on it. You know, if the court would like to, it would go outside of the agreement. In my research, I've noticed that in class settlement cases, generally the court can approve or deny the settlement. You know, can't really modify it. So the court could make suggestions, and as we noted in our last paragraph, we'd, you know, be happy to consult with counsel and make amendments if necessary, for, you know, a revised agreement if possible. But what we have here, we think is fair, and class counsel thinks it's fair. There have been none of the factors from 23E2 that would, you know, make it seem unfair. There's been no collusion. There's been no, attorney fee problems or things like that. The agreement treats class members equitably between one another. So for all those reasons, the parties think the court should approve the agreement as written.
Given the longstanding nature of what seems to be a pre-docket purgatory based on the lack of a process for the transfer of records, why should the court give its official stamp of approval to an agreement that essentially just says we'll try to do better? Is that enough under those circumstances?
Well, Your Honor, I think that it is, because here there's a binding agreement about trying to do better. And we have concrete relief for several thousand veterans. One thing I do want to say is the original 10,000 number, after some investigation, we determined that several thousand of those appeals were appeals from improper claimants. Specifically, it seems like they were appeals from medical providers about billing, and they were supposed to be sent in a completely different appeals process per their contractual agreement and not sent to the board. So when we found that out, that reduced the number of claimants, you know, in the potential class significantly. And then once we, you know, started working on the settlement, we were able to move through the remaining class members, and we're continuing to work them down. So I think here the parties have acted, you know, with nothing but good faith and trying to do the right thing for the class and also protect their own interests. So we think this is, again, a fair and reasonable and adequate agreement.
Is there any differentiation between class members who are veterans and those who aren't? You mentioned the non-veteran healthcare providers, and I know VA has indicated that there was a big dump of those cases into the system, and that caused some problems. But is there a differentiation? And what if the non-veteran healthcare provider is like the objector, if that's a fair characterization of the person who responded, who is a family?
Sure. Well, Your Honor, you'll notice that in the class definition, we specifically limit the class to veterans and dependents. And that was to get around the provider problem. You know, we noted that there were provider problems with the provider appeals and thought that it was not appropriate to include them in the class. That wasn't something that class counsel was thinking about when they proposed the class, and it just resulted in a higher number. There were still, once we took those out, there were still thousands of you know, potential class members that then resulted in the, you know, the number of class members that we worked down until we got to the number of class members as of the date of the agreement. So again, this has been a year-long process of, I think, everybody trying to work together to bring resolution to this matter.
I'm just curious, how did you come up with the 10,000, and then it became less and less? Do you punch certain descriptions into a computer system and things come out on the other end, or?
That might be a better question for class counsel. I believe that the 10,000 number resulted from a FOIA request to the board asking for the number of VHA appeals that were on the at that time on the pre-docket queue.
Thank you.
So the ones that give us the numbers of everyone in limbo.
And I'm going to ask you, did you participate in the negotiation of the settlement?
I did, Your Honor.
Judge Bartley?
Mm-hmm. Is there any particular way the parties have anticipated that the court would articulate concerns such that the provision that paragraph 22 of the proposed settlement agreement would come into play?
No, Your Honor, we haven't discussed that. But again, this is a first for the court and a first for both of us. So, you know, we're kind of trying to go through as we best can and see how it goes.
Anything further?
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I just wanted to clarify a couple of things. As for this last question for the 10,000 class members and how it came, it was the FOIA requests. And it, the class members, we didn't know a lot about it because there wasn't privacy concerns. We didn't have attorney-client privilege at that part. And afterwards, when we started certifying the class and became actual class counsel, we were able to actually see who the individuals are and what their appeals were. And as for the files that Judge Bartley asked in paragraph 4 of the proposed settlement, the files are regarding the decisions and the applications that the veterans have submitted. And additionally, I just wanted to say that, just reiterating that the protocol is going to potentially benefit other class members, not just these class members, but other members that are not part of this class. This is just creating a uniform protocol and everybody is on the same side. And it was helped to design. The settlement has been worked together from both sides, and it doesn't represent just something class counsel wants, but this is just something that benefits this court, the veterans, the VA, the board, just all over, just helps everybody. But I don't have anything else to add, and I am open to questions if you did have any.
Is it your understanding, is it class's understanding that the terms of the settlement agreement, that some of the terms of the settlement agreement will exist beyond the group being satisfied?
Yes, hopefully that this sets kind of like, it's a uniform protocol that they've been able to do this before, they're going to continue to do it again. It's going to move away from veterans just sitting and waiting for a letter or an email, just waiting to say, and maybe there have been veterans that have waited 2-3 years just to be given a denial, just to be refused. And sometimes they just need more records. Like, that's all that's needed. So shortening it to 45 days, this allows the settlement ends up honoring these veterans. It honors the service of the veterans, and it responds to the system-wide delay.
Yes, we don't have any further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you for these reasons. We respectfully request for this proposed settlement to be approved. Thank you.
Counsel, any follow-up?
No follow-up, Your Honor. We also request respectfully that the court approve this settlement unless there are any further questions.
Any questions, Judge Bartley? Judge Jacob? Okay, thank you. No further questions, and thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take it under advisement. The court is adjourned and we'll come down and greet counsel. And I need an apology to you.
All right.